You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Most writers and radio show hosts know that to connect with your fans, you need to do more than just write books or record the latest podcasts. There are many different elements that go into forming an online platform, but there are also many hidden traps. To make matters worse, solid advice on how to survive the muddy waters is scarce. In the book Hidden Traps, I talk about some of the important issues of working with an online platform, highlighting traps that could put your physical or internet security at risk or be harmful to your reputation. Are your social media posts just links with a few disjointed words making you look like someone who can't complete a sentence? Did your new website cost you more than you anticipated? Are you leaking your personal contact details across the web without even knowing it? Then you need Hidden Traps. Hidden Traps is now available in paperback and ebook from a variety of retailers, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Visit blackwolfpublications.com for more details.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-553-8687. That's 800-553-8687. Again, 800-553-8687.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not the government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty HealthShare is founded on the idea that most people truly want to help one another. Healthcare sharing allows members to do just that as a true community that supports one another in times of need. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your health care, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty HealthShare and take back the control of your health care while helping those around you. Call Liberty at 855-58-LIBERTY. Again, that's 855-58-LIBERTY for more information, or you can check them out at libertyhealthshare.org. Again, that's libertyhealthshare.org.
My son was in the Army back during Desert Storm, but even then he wanted an MBA. He looked at a dozen schools, but only one offered the online education and flexibility he needed while he was in a tent in Iraq, Grantham University. Turns out that Grantham's been delivering affordable, relevant college and advanced degrees for over 65 years. Heck, if they can deliver a quality education to a soldier in a tent overseas, think about the flexibility Grantham can offer you so you can earn your degree too. It doesn't matter how complicated or full your life is, if getting a degree is on your bucket list, you'll want to do what my son did. You'll want to call Grantham. Find out how easy it is to get started on your education so you can check that college degree off your bucket list. Call Grantham right now. 800-910-1370. That's 800-910-1370. Flexible, affordable, relevant. Call 800-910-1370.
At St. Jude, a family never sees a bill at all. It's like the world has been lifted off of your shoulders.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Sometimes writers feel lost, unsure why a passage may not be working. takes another set of eyes to help us nurture our writing into full maturity. At Black Wolf Editorial Services, we strive to enable writers to develop and grow, offering manuscript critiques and line edits through a mentoring editorial style. We also offer assistance on generating a writer's bio for your websites. Black Wolf Editorial Services, nurturing your writing into maturity. For a full list of services, visit blackwolfeditorial.com.
You're listening to the Spark Radio Network, internet radio like you've never heard before. Innovation, creativity, and imagination are all said to begin with a spark. So fasten your seatbelt and take the ride of your life and listen for the spark.
Sometimes we need to slow down and remember the simple pleasures in life. Good coffee, good books, and good company. Come on in. Take a seat. The coffee's just been brewed. Let's see who we have in the coffee shop today.
Oh, what a beautiful day in the coffee shop. There's got to be a book on a table around here somewhere. There's a book. And it's called Reload. And the name on the cover is David McCaleb. How you doing today, David?
I'm doing well. Doing well, thank you. And thank you for inviting me.
Oh, I love to have guests in the coffee shop. And if you've listened to too many of my previous episodes, you will probably know I am a thriller reader at heart. But I'll read anything that sits in front of me, even the cereal box if it hangs around long enough. So, tell me a little bit about Reload.
Well, Reload is the second book in a series. And in this book, there's several different point of views. Yes, I've got my main character, Red Harmon, and he is actually being, his family is being pursued by an unknown force, and his wife is somehow brought into the fray as far as being one of a potential mole who has leaked information to North Korea. And so he and his team are actually inserted into North Korea in order to undo some damage that this leak has done. And he's torn between loyalty to his country, loyalty to his family. And this theme is paralleled throughout the whole book, because there's multiple point of views. One of them's from a North Korean prison guard. Same thing. He's torn between loyalty to his own family and his country. And as he works against his own government and against his own military in order to be able to secure the freedom of his family. And another point of view from a Chinese electrical worker is woven in, and his motivation is not family, but revenge, and revenge at what the communist government and how it had destroyed his father and his family. And so all these kind of get blended together, and some end up in a much better situation in the end than others. But it's a book about redemption. It's a book that's dedicated to the hundreds of thousands of prisoners that are currently, even now, even today, tortured and imprisoned in North Korean gulags.
Have you ever listened to my other show, Jesse's POV?
I've started to. If you recall, I was having some issues with the playback on my particular device.
Yep.
But I started to, but was unsuccessful.
Well, Jesse's POV is all about international and military affairs. And given that, you could imagine that North Korea has been quite the topic.
Absolutely.
So how did you go about researching the Hermit Kingdom?
Yes, that's a good question, because there's scant evidence out there and scant information out there. So I did a couple things. There's a book that I read called Escape from Camp 14, I believe is what it was called. And it's written by a gentleman who is, as far as we know, like the only person that has escaped from a North Korean gulag, but was actually born in a gulag. See, the idea over there is it takes three generations to actually cleanse the sin of one person. So if I'm over there with my family and I am found to be for whatever reason, I'm thrown into a gulag for political reasons, for whatever that I did, if I spoke out against the supreme leader, then it can take up to three generations, meaning myself, my children, and their children can actually be imprisoned, lifetime sentence. And so this gentleman was someone who was raised in a North Korean gulag. He escaped. And so I read his book. It was an absolutely fascinating, fascinating story. I read things on everything from Amnesty International. There have been a lot of publications when the United Nations has actually looked into the topic. So I was able to find some of their reports and their research, and come to find out that a lot of the stories they support each other. They were, in terms of the just the decrepit conditions and the oppressiveness. Oh, another one that I read too. Get this. There's a book called Escape from Red China. And this one was really, it heavily influenced the way that I portrayed North Korea, because the book was written by someone who escaped when Mao Zedong was coming into power, and all the atrocities that he committed against the people that he was supposedly setting free. This one particular person was able to march up into the ranks to where he was entrusted to go overseas, and he defected. Well, he wrote this book called Escape from Red China, and it was great to be able to see like the perspective of what was going on behind the scenes, what the Communist Party was doing, and how they had to act, and how they were living in perpetual fear. And only after reading this book, which was about a different country, China, did I actually understand how these people, when they were in, like when their leader died, it was a few years ago that there was a change in the regime, and that when their leader died, all these people who had been oppressed and were by their leadership, you see them in the streets wailing and crying, and you're going, well, how in the world can these people be sad when such a tyrant has passed on? You would think that they would be happy. And only then, after reading this book, did I realize, you know what? These people live in such fear. They are being so heavily controlled. They're being watched all the time, that unless they portray outward emotion, that at the loss of their leader, there will be reprisals. That unless they cry hard enough, if they don't portray enough emotion or enough sadness, then there are actually reprisals for that. And so only then, again, after reading this other book, did I understand kind of an insight into how such a regime can actually oppress its people to such an extent.
Well, I've got to say, sounds like you did your homework.
As best as I could, without going into it, kind of scared me. I don't think I would want to actually go. That's one place that I don't think I would want to visit in order to do my research.
I have said repeatedly that on my show, Jesse's POV, cross Pyongyang, Syria, and Iran off your most want to visit list, at least until the regime changed their behavior.
Agreed. Agreed.
Now, Iran, I'll be on the first plane over there I can as soon as it falls, because I want to see it before it changes.
Yeah, that's one of the problems with Korea, though. It's like they went through, there were an estimated up to, like, in between the, it was in the early 90s when they went through their famine. I think it was like 92 to 95. There are estimates that as many as 3.5 million of their people died of starvation because of mismanagement. When you're in a country that doesn't live off the free market, where the right amount of people automatically are farming versus doing other things. I mean, where you're told you will farm and you will farm this. And, because of the mismanagement of the government, there was a severe famine, or at least I'll say part. You can't lay it all at their feet, but a lot of it was the result of their mismanagement. Well, you would think that such a regime would just implode, but it didn't. I mean, this is the third generation that we're on, and that's kind of the scary thing. Looking at North Korea, it's like what is it going to take for these guys to have a change? And really, they are very resilient. I cannot imagine what these guys have to go through, but they are so resilient, and I don't see anything necessarily changing in the near future. So we talk about, unless something changes, it's not going to. I just don't see it happening unless there's another outside force which requires it.
It would require the military option to make it change. Let's just face that.
Unfortunately, I believe you're right.
North Korea itself has said that no sanction will ever bring the table and that their nuclear weapons and missiles are off the table for negotiation. And so right there, they're saying, forget it. And I've somewhat become the station expert on North Korea. Mm. And it is just horrific what the government does to people.
That's what in all my research, that's what I understand. I mean, it is oppressive. It is brainwashing. It is it's tyrannical.
So what made you decide, first of all, to write, and why thrillers?
Well, I think the story sort of found me. The writing sort of found me. I mean, I come from a very, very creative family. Creativity was cultured in our home. My father, my mother, both my sisters actually currently make their living in the arts, a very good living. And I'm the one that was responsible. I went more along the lines of, well, I had, some military service. And then when I got out, I was in corporate finance. So I was kind of the boring one. And this is just, it started out as my creative outlet. I was like, I just felt caged and I needed to be able to have some sort of creative outlet. And I had this opening scene in my mind. And so I wrote it down, and I was challenged one time. I was actually at a reunion, a high school reunion, and I had a good friend who had written a couple books. Now, they were theological books, but he had written several of them. And he said, you need to finish that. You need to write it. And so at his challenge, I did. And I wrote, it took me a while to really get started on it. But once I got started and rolling, it moved very quickly. I had written well over 100,000 words. Now, the book is not 100,000 words, but I was up to 120,000 words when I was done. And it had only taken me about 6 months. And so you can kind of understand or appreciate the crap that the book truly was at that point. But I didn't know it. And so I didn't tell anybody actually that I had written the book until it was done. My family knew. But I went ahead and I presented it to a couple people and said, hey, I've polished this. I've gone through it several times. And no one was, very rude to me, but they did. They said, hey, you've got a few things to learn. Why don't you go to this workshop? And I did. And so that's actually where the craft started coming in, where I started to learn, oh my goodness, there's a way to actually do these things properly. The story was great. The way it was told was lacking. So that story that took maybe 6 months to write, it took me about 2 years to redo, to rewrite. And it started out at 120,000 words, and it got drastically pared down to about, I want to say it's about 85,000 words was what the first story was. Recall was the name of that book. And but it's a journey that all of us writers, I suppose, have to go through, but it is one that I don't think I went through very gracefully, because it would be a whole lot easier to learn how to write and then write the book. But I had written the book, and rewriting something is, in my opinion, much more difficult than doing it properly from the get-go.
Well, first of all, want to thank you for your service to our country, because less than 10% of the population serves, and thank you.
Absolutely. I appreciate the opportunity.
Now, secondly, they say editing is slaying your darling. What was the one thing you had to take out of that 120 words you didn't want to move, but it had to go?
Oh, my goodness. There was one time when we were going through a particular section that was going into a lot of detail on some of the characters that they were my characters. I mean, I felt like I had a relationship with these guys. And what happens was my teachers, the leaders of this group. I call it my AA group. I still go to it. It's not Alcoholics Anonymous. It's Authors Anonymous. We all sit around and we gripe because we have to write, and we tell each other how good or how bad the other guy is doing. It's all constructive criticism done in good fun. But nonetheless, so these guys were like, listen, ultimately what it came down to was a question of craft. Unless it propels the story, or unless it deepens the meaning, you may think that this is great, and some of your readers might think it's great, but ultimately it bogs things down. It slows the pace, and this is a thriller. It needs to continue to move. So although this is interesting stuff, and it does deepen the characters and their relationships with each other, you need to cut it out. And so I condensed in that one week between classes, I ended up condensing four chapters down into one. Four chapters that talked about a bunch of backstory on my protagonist, Red Harmon, his commander, a gentleman by the name of Colonel Jim Mayard, and all these things which I thought were important. But what they said was, if it's important, it's going to come out in the narrative. It'll come out in the story. So you don't have to give it to us in a big chunk, but just weave those important elements into the story. And what it taught me was, well, what is truly important and what isn't? What is just in there as fluff? Versus what is in there, which is deepening the meaning, which is deepening the experience, and in there for the user versus in there for me, excuse me, in there for the reader versus in there for my own edification. So it really was painful. But ultimately, and it might have been over a couple weeks, because I might have cut it down a little bit, and it's hard, it was a while ago. They might have said, no, that's not enough, and you got to do it some more. But it was literally four chapters that I condensed down into one.
Was there one scene in there in particular that you just clung on to and said, no, I can't do it? But you did it anyway. Was there one?
Well, there are times that an author has to do that, like, because you have to take initially I took all feedback as the gospel, and I said, okay, like what these guys that are leading the group, David and Lenore Poirier are their names, and they still lead it, and you know it's out of the goodness of their heart just that they do this. They're authors, they're teachers. But even, you know, at first I took everything that they said as the gospel, and I did it all. And then as I kind of found my own way, there are certain things that I had to realize that no, just because they, or maybe some other authors say, hey, this needs to go, or this needs to change. You as the author are the only one that kind of has, everything in sight. So you realize, you're the one that realizes, if I change this one little thing, not only do I have to, does it have effects as far as what I've already written, but it has effects all the way down the line, as long as you've plotted it out reasonably, all the way down the line through the end. And so there's sometimes that they say, hey, I don't like this thing. The fact that you're talking about, it may be something that seems relatively random, but yet you know that, hey, I'm talking about this North Korean prison guard's, you know, relationship with his deceased wife for a reason. I only go into it for one paragraph. Why? Because there's a direct parallel with my protagonist that comes out in chapter 30, and so I'm weaving these things together, and so I kind of had to find my own way to be able to say, you know what, there's some things that, yes, you do have to hold on to. But that's really painful for an author. Like, until you get, I guess, your thick skin on, like you can talk to some authors and you realize they haven't gone through that process yet. Like some authors, they'll still have, and I mean no disrespect by this, but they'll still have their thin skin, so that if you provide some sort of, even in very good, in well-meaning manner, be able to provide some feedback to them. If it's any sort of criticism, you can tell it kind of hurts and it kind of pinches. But after a while, you know, that stuff, you just take it and roll with it. If you've been through like a good hardcore editing process, you can't afford to have thin skin. it'll automatically be thickened for you, or you'll get out of the game.
I think that is excellent advice. And as a reader, remember, I'm not a writer. I have tried and failed. It just doesn't inspire me.
Okay.
But as a reader, I can tell when a book has been well edited. And
good.
And I love the ones that are. Now, I'll sometimes plod my way through ones that aren't just because, well, I love to read. And I'm either blessed or cursed. I will let you decide. I read about 3 novels a week.
Wow.
That sounds like a lot, but when you read it 2,500 words a minute, you can't keep yourself in books.
I wish I could read that fast.
Now,
I'm a very slow reader, and I make it up to myself. I've convinced myself that I'm thorough, but ultimately I'm just slow. I do enjoy it though.
Well, see, I'm blessed that I can read fast, but I'm cursed in the fact that that ride comes to an end so quickly. I'm forced to leave those characters behind. That as a writer, you've drawn me in and made me grow attached to, and now done.
Mm. Oh, hey, you just mentioned something that prodded a that made me think of you. Asked, hey, is there something that you really wanted to hold on to? And there is, and I've thought of an example, and I can't. Is it okay to do spoilers here or no? I mean,
entirely up to you.
Okay, well, I'll say this. At the end of my second book, Reload. I wanted to end it on something completely different and something that was unforeseen. And so this is a spoiler alert. I mean, if anyone's listening and they don't want to know how the second book ends, you better, you know, fast forward past this point, because originally I had it to where Red, my operative, ends up, he kills his wife. He chooses country, and he ends up, you know, shooting his wife, trying to save her life, but he ends up losing it. And that's how it ended. And my publisher came back and she was like, no, you can't end it that way. You can't, like she said, you can't, you've got to be able to give a little bit different ending. I thought it was a fantastic ending. I mean, it was heart-wrenching. And, but she said no. And so I had to trust her. And I said, you know what? She knows, she's been in this industry a lot longer than I have. And so I changed the last couple chapters. I mean, I went back and I made her so she didn't die. But I still feel like it had a very solid ending. And actually, to tell you the truth, she was right, because the ending that I came up with is actually, it was great. It's a satisfying, and I'm not going to tell you exactly what happened now, but it's a satisfying, absolutely rock solid ending. One thing that I took out as well was, I had a cat get run over and my publisher is a cat lover, and she came back, but the cat getting run over was for good reason. It was foreshadowing what was about to happen. The cat hesitated in the middle of the road. The Humvee's charging, getting shot at. The cat zigged when it should have zagged. Boom, it got run over. Poor kitty. But then it hesitated, you know, and that's the thing that the reader was left with. Well, right after that is a whole scene of the dangers of hesitation in combat. And so it had really significant literal meaning. But my publisher said, listen, you can't kill animals. You can kill people all you want, but you can't kill cats and you can't kill dogs. And I was like, well, but, and I explained to her the literary significance of it. And she's like, that's great. I love it, but you can't kill the cat. And she said, what if we just make the C into an R, make it a rat? I was like, okay, we can do that. A rat runs out in the middle of the road. It's foreseeable. You know, that could happen. It gets run over. Well, when I got the book, when I got the galley back, and basically when everything had gone off to print, it wasn't even a rat. It wasn't even in book. She had taken it completely out. And so I was like, oh, well, that's fine. But she said her point was, you know, you will get negative reviews if you kill animals, specifically cats, you will get negative reviews on Amazon. And you know what? She's right. Amazon reviews are really important. And you do, every once in a while, I will see negative reviews about authors that have done bad things to animals. And so I'm glad she actually ended up taking it out.
Well, I think you brought up something very important. And as a member of the armed force, you know that hesitation in combat is lethal.
It can be. Absolutely. Hesitation, I'll say this, at the wrong time, when action is needed. My character that I was foreshadowing is a New Yorker who, he's very headstrong. He's got a very protective persona. In other words, he's leading this caravan and it's being threatened by an RPG on a rooftop, and he just charges headlong into a building without clearing it properly. And so he didn't hesitate whatsoever, but he came very near death as a result. And so it was really kind of an experiment of, yes, hesitation can kill you, but also eagerness without temper can also be equally as lethal.
Yes, it can. And how did you research the special forces?
Oh, good question. I will say just from the get-go that, like, I do take artistic liberties with certain things. So, like, my book Recall and Recon. I'm sorry, Recall and Reload. Recon's the third book. I do take certain artistic liberties that if you are a hardcore military thriller lover, you'll notice that there is a little bit of James Bond thrown in. So I try not to go overboard with that whatsoever, but there is a little bit in there. So how do I research it? Honestly, a lot of it's through the internet. A lot of it's just talking with members. I mean, I'm privileged. My next door neighbor is a prior SEAL. A couple of the folks that are in the author's class are prior military. One of the guys who's a poet of all things, he used to be an FBI interrogator. So he gave me some pointers on, hey, in this interrogation scene, you know, it was really interesting to be able to hear his perspectives, and just talking with prior military, talking with current military, and honestly, a lot of it just online as best as you can. You got to take what's online with a grain of salt sometimes, and you have to be careful what you read and what you get out of there. But there is a lot of useful information online. Google is your friend.
Well, I think you've made some excellent points about the research, and I have two cats. In fact,
okay,
I have Host Kitty, and I don't want to see him run over either. So I think your publisher was right on that one.
Well, good, good. I'm glad you will not be offended.
Well, it takes a lot more than a dead cat to offend me, but it would have made me think twice about the next book.
Okay. Well, I just didn't want any negative Amazon reviews. And so that was my motivation. But ultimately, like I said, it was the right decision. I have to hand it to her. She, my publisher, that is, did a great job.
Now, you went the traditionally published path.
Correct.
What made you go down the traditional road versus just self-publishing?
I definitely considered self-publishing, especially after I had received countless rejections. Any sort of agent or a publisher just to review your manuscript is, you know, we're talking about cats. So, I mean, it's like giving a bath to a cat. It's almost impossible. And so you really have to, the whole thick skin comes into play where you just have to realize my book is good. As long as you realize, and as long as it is, you'll have the confidence to be able to say, you know, someone's going to get this. Well, I'd gotten so many rejections that I considered self-publishing, and but ultimately ended up doing a submission. In this case, it was a little bit, I never do things straightforward. I'm an entrepreneur in some senses, so I always do things the hard way. Just like the way that I started, I wrote the book and then learned how to write. So then I had to rewrite the entire thing. Well, the whole thing with how I actually got published is kind of a similar story. I submitted queries to agents far and wide, and then I found one one publisher, Kensington is my publisher, and found an email address for the one for the I call her my publisher. She's actually my editor, but I found it for the editor that all the thrillers were submitted to, and specifically the Black Ops thrillers. And so I said, well, shoot, I'll just submit it directly to the editor. And I did, and ended up getting a reply back saying, yes, please send me the first couple chapters. I did that. She said, send me the whole manuscript. I did that. And so then she offered me a contract. And so that's it. It kind of found me. In other words, I'm not one of these authors that says, oh, the traditionally published is the only way to go. Because you know what? There are some really successful self-published authors now. That is a viable option. You have to understand what you're undertaking, though. I mean, you're undertaking a lot of, like, I know how to write. I don't necessarily know how to sell books. Okay. So I'm good at writing. I'm not necessarily good at selling the books. And I didn't want to have to learn. And so I decided, you know what, I've got a contract. I didn't know what the heck. I mean, I my background is in finance. I'm used to looking at contracts. And so I tried to understand the darn thing. And so then when I realized I couldn't, then I went out and I said, hey, listen, I've got a contract. Would you mind being my agent and interpret this thing for me and representing me, making sure that we negotiate good terms? And so that's actually how I ended up getting an agent. So it was a little bit backwards. But you asked, you know, how did I choose? Really, it chose me. I mean, I thought that I did seriously consider it, but I wanted someone else who was good at selling, who was good at publishing, that knows that particular industry, to do what they do best. And so that's what I did. But I encourage folks that are considering self-publishing, I mean, don't think about it as a secondary, you know, option. Hey, if A doesn't work, then B might work. There are some very successful people that have been both self-published and traditionally published. And so it's important to understand, to go into it with your eyes open, understand what you're taking on your shoulders, and if it works for you, fantastic.
Well, that is a wonderful tale. And speaking of finance and marketing, it is time to pay those radio station bills. Yes, it is time to take a commercial break. So I'm going to pour David another cup of coffee, and we are going to go pay those radio station bills, and we will see you on the other side.
Most writers and radio show hosts know that to connect with your fans, you need to do more than just write books or record the latest podcasts. There are many different elements that go into forming an online platform, but there are also many hidden traps. To make matters worse, solid advice on how to survive the muddy waters is scarce. In the book Hidden Traps, I talk about some of the important issues of working with an online platform, highlighting traps that could put your physical or internet security at risk or be harmful to your reputation. Are your social media posts just links with a few disjointed words, making you look like someone who can't complete a sentence? Did your new website cost you more than you anticipated? Are you leaking your personal contact details across the web without even knowing it? Then you need Hidden Traps. Hidden Traps is now available in paperback and ebook from a variety of retailers, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Visit blackwolfpublications.com for more details.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-553-8687. That's 800-553-8687. Again, 800-553-8687.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not the government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your healthcare? Exercise your freedom with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty HealthShare is founded on the idea that most people truly want to help one another. Healthcare sharing allows members to do just that as a true community that supports one another in times of need. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your health care, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty HealthShare and take back the control of your health care while helping those around you. Call Liberty at 855-58-LIBERTY. Again, that's 855-58-LIBERTY for more information, or you can check them out at libertyhealthshare.org. Again, that's libertyhealthshare.org.
Sometimes riders feel lost, unsure why a passage may not be working. It takes another set of eyes to help us nurture our riding into full maturity. At Black Wolf Editorial Services, we strive to enable riders to develop and grow, offering manuscript critiques and line edits through a mentoring editorial style. We also offer assistance on generating a rider's bio for your sites. Black Wolf Editorial Services, nurturing your riding into maturity. For a full list of services, visit blackwolfeditorial.com.
All right, thank y'all for hanging in there with us while we paid those radio station bills. Yes, author David McCaleb, who, by the way, his books were Reload hit number 3 on the Amazon Military Thrillers list, and I believe it was Recall?
It was Recall.
Hit number 2. So
they did.
David, that is an excellent test.
Well, thank you.
Achievement.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, all right. What is your favorite coffee shop treat?
Well, I enjoy strong coffee. And when I say strong coffee, I'm not like a Lee Child, Jack Reacher that enjoys it completely black, but it will be just a little bit of sugar and cream. But my most favorite treat is Kahlua. So I like strong coffee, Kahlua. And you know what's interesting?
What?
We just recently purchased a French press. I mean, that's like the best investment we ever made. I swear, the coffee that comes out of a French press is so much better than what came out of our regular Melitta or whatever the brand of coffee maker is that we've had. Have you ever? I mean, French press coffee is awesome. We're hooked.
It is, but it's just not something I have the time to do on a routine basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like my coffee very strong. And in fact, I swear I've lost a spoon in a mug or two. Oh, no, we're talking like your average 10 cup coffee maker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'll put 8 scoops of coffee.
Right. The nice thing about the French press is it brews it like stronger. So you can still get like a really strong brew with less coffee. We got hooked on it just because I've only been out of the country twice in my entire life. I hate to admit that, but I have. And this last time was to Ireland. Well, going around Ireland, whenever we had coffee, everybody served it in a French press. And so by the time we left, we're like, we're getting home, we're getting a French press. And that's what we did. So we got used to the cleaning up. It's not all that bad.
Oh, I'll have to think about that. All right, so you've written 2 books. You have a third due out in August of 2018.
Yes, ma'am.
Is there a fourth one? Huh?
Well, I'll say this. This will, yes, there is a fourth one that I'm working on now. And I'm really torn, I really have to say, on what I need to be writing right now, because the Red Ops series is doing really well. But while I was writing this Red Ops series, my daughter, now this is she's in college now, but at the time she was in high school, that I'm talking about now. And I was helping with one of her creative writing classes. And so you get kids are some of the best, places to get ideas. And so I was helping her with a creative writing class, and we were kind of doing this exercise where we were brainstorming just plot lines. And we came up with an absolute killer idea. And it's about, it's something that I know a little bit about. The main character is a waterman. I grew up, I'm right here on the Eastern Shore of Virginia. There's the Chesapeake Bay. I grew up on the water. And a lot of guys around here raise oysters. And my father raised oysters. My son's helping somebody raise some oysters now. So I know this. And so we started with an oyster farmer that was actually up in Maine, and he gets called back in time by the spirit of his dead sister, plopped into a Viking longboat inside a Viking body, and he's trying to figure out what the heck is going on. The pilot of the boat is beating him because he's not rowing. Well, he doesn't know how to row, and so finally he's just like, whatever, just to quit being beaten, he'll start rowing, and he starts rowing, and he's trying to figure out what the heck is going on. Every once in a while, he'll see his dead sister's spirit, and she's very elusive, and he knows something's going on. He's trying to figure out what the heck's going on, and how he can get back to where he was. But it comes to find out that these Vikings are on a mission to rescue their chieftain's daughter, and his relationship with his deceased sister is intertwined with this chieftain's daughter that's been kidnapped. And so the only way out is to actually join with these men and go through and try and rescue this daughter. And hopefully that will end him. Well, hopefully that'll set the world straight, but we'll see. So I've got about 20,000 words of this written, and you need, like, my novels are about 85,000, between 75 and 85,000 words. And so I'm basically about a quarter of the way through this book that I just wrote for, well, kind of the fun of it. The only problem is it's in my head, and it's like the only thing I can write right now. It's crazy. I would love to start, and I've started on some plot lines for the Red Ops series number 4, but this is something that it's just like, it will not leave me alone. I've got to write this. And so I've talked to a couple authors, and they're like, well, basically, as long as you can afford to do it. In other words, as long as you can afford to possibly write a book that doesn't sell. I mean, who knows? I love this book. It's absolutely killer, but you know, it's not Red Ops. It's not Black, it's not a military thriller. It's something completely different. And so there's a lot of risk involved there. So we'll see. I'll do it as a labor of love. If it sells, fantastic. If not, then you know what? It doesn't. And I've had a good time writing.
Well, I am going to bring up another thriller author for just a moment. Okay. And that would be my favorite traditionally published thriller author of all time. And he is a multiple number one New York Times bestselling author, Brad Thor.
Okay.
I'm sure you've heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was asked one time why he writes. And he says he writes to get the voices out of his head. And I think that's the situation you're in right now. You have to write to get the characters out of your head so that you can either A, edit and polish this book, or B, get back to Red Op.
No, absolutely. It's like, and that's really what it's come down to. Like, I need to be able to write this so I can do just what you said, get back to Red Ops. I mean, I would, if this does well, fantastic. But it's like, I cannot, whenever I start down the journey of the next Red Ops, it's like there's this thing in me that says, hey, that's not what you're supposed to be working on. And, you know, I left these characters running around a riverbank up in Maine. And, you know, there's all types of things going on. And it's like, you know, I got to finish it. Plus, it means a lot to my family. You know, my daughter helped me create it. A lot of her is in it. And so I really need to, I feel like I just need to finish this journey myself.
Well, I wish you the best with it because, well,
I appreciate that.
I do have another question for you.
Sure.
You mentioned something about plotting out books. So are you one of these outline people? Before you ever start, you've got every scene outlined and you know exactly what's going to happen? Or do you have plot point A, plot point C? You know where it's going, but how you're getting from A to B, B to C, C to D, anybody's guess? Or are you one of those people, just let the characters run away with the story?
probably closer to number two. In other words, I'm somewhere between the two extremes. I started out as your third example where I didn't know where the book was going. So recall, I had the first chapter written and I started into the rest of it. And I kind of had to figure things out. I was like, well, what type of organization is this guy a part of? And, you know, who is it? And ultimately, I got to a point where I was like, I've got to plot something out instead of just figuring this thing out one chapter at a time. And so I finally did make a rough outline of the rest of the book. And that made me, it gave me a piece to know, okay, this is generally where we're going with it. And so, yes, I will go ahead and I can kind of aim toward that end. But it's a very, and I took the same approach for the second book and the third book. I plotted them out generally. I did not, like some authors are very, like they basically write the whole thing out in outline form almost, and then just sit back and enjoy being able to write it. That to me is very, very painful. And so I kind of come up with something in the middle. I write generally how the plot is going to go. I make sure that it's well balanced. I try to make sure that, okay, we've got a scene one, a scene two, a scene three. There are all types of arguments for or against this. But I like to be able to know that when I'm starting out on this journey, that I'm somewhat assured that it's going to end up someplace. And the characters do still do weird and strange things. They are running around on the page. They will surprise you. And that will change what happens down the road. And you have to be able to be flexible with that because characters are just, I mean, let's face it, they are people. And they're different combinations of people that we've known or imagined or whatever, but I mean, they've got their own personalities. And so they do really wild and strange and crazy things, which thrills the reader and the writer as well, but it means that I got to adjust. But usually those adjustments aren't difficult to take. And so you take them in stride and you push on.
Well, David, I've got to say, there's one other thing I've heard Brad Thor say, and I'd say that you've taken it to heart without even knowing it. He always says, no surprise in the writer, no surprise in the reader. No joy in the writer, no joy in the reader.
Oh, wow. That's really good. That's a good saying. I like that.
Don't know if he came up with it or if he just uses it, but I've heard him say it on multiple interviews. So I'd say you're in good company.
No, I appreciate it. I mean, Brad Thor's a very accomplished, very good author. But you do, you have to enjoy what you're doing. And ultimately, even when I was talking with other authors about my quandary about, well, should I continue the Red Op series or should I just kind of do this one off right now? And most of them basically were very supportive. And they said, you got to write what you enjoy writing. And because if you don't, it will come out, you know, it comes out in whatever you do, in whatever work that you do. If you don't enjoy it, people know. And it'll come out in your writing as well.
Well, I've got to say, my whole face lights up when that little red on air button lights up and tells me that my microphone is hot.
Oh, neat.
It's just, now you put me in front of the same keyboard, take away the microphone and tell me to give you a story. You just grew three heads and you might as well be from Mars.
No, it's not as hard as you think. It's like any other exercise. You know, once you kind of get into it and you start thinking along those lines, it becomes very natural. It can actually be difficult to get back. Like there are times that I'm sitting there doing, you know, like there are times that I'm in my writing world that I need not to be, you know, when I need to be more present to, you know, whatever's going on around me, whether it be my family or whatever. I mean, when you really get into it and you start exercising that part of your brain, sometimes it can be more of a challenge to actually step back out of it.
Well, it sounds fascinating. Like I said, it's just not something I enjoy. Although you're not the first author to suggest it, I doubt you'll be the last.
Well, no, you got it. If you enjoy this and then you enjoy the radio show, then that's exactly what you need to be doing.
Oh, that's good because I'm sorry. I like my coffee shop show.
Good
and
for you.
I like my other show too. And I couldn't imagine doing much else.
Good, good, good.
Now, is there anything you want to bring up that we haven't already mentioned?
I'm a writer, so I'll think of that tomorrow or the next day.
Well, then in that case, I do have one final question for you. Why don't you share with my listeners where they can find you on social media when you and I aren't sitting here swapping stuff about thrillers?
Just remember, McCaleb Books, McCaleb, Mike, Charlie, Charlie, Alpha, Lima, Echo, Bravo, McCaleb Books. And that's where you'll find me on Twitter. That's my handle, McCaleb Books. That's where you'll find me on Facebook. That's where you'll find me on LinkedIn. That's where you'll find me on Google Plus. If you want to find, where all of this comes together, though, my website's simply my name, davidmccaleb.com. And there you'll be able to find information on the books, on all the places to order them, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, everywhere else. You'll find some interesting things about myself. And about the industry, I like to blog about, various topics. And that's a good place, davidmccaleb.com. If you're interested in, or if you can't remember McCaleb Books, remember davidmccaleb.com, and you'll find links there.
All right. And for anyone trying to track me down, you can find me on Twitter at Jesse's POV. Of course, you can always check out jessiescoffeeshop.com. And if you're interested in joining me in the coffee shop or you ever miss any of my guest contact information, you can email me at the station. That's Jesse, J-E-S-S-I-E, at klrnradio.com. Now, I'm going to do what I've been waiting to do, like seriously waiting to do, all episode. I am snatching that copy of Reload off the table, pouring myself a cup of coffee, and I am going to settle down with what looks to be a great book, and I will see you folks next time in the coffee shop.